You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All comments are current at the time of publication. It's a podcast that's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this episode is presented by Lucy McCann.
Welcome to our third and final episode of LawPod UK's International Women's Day series, coming to you on International Women's Day a year after our first episode, where we looked at a range of issues. We asked, is there a problem? We spoke about equal pay, the fair allocation of work, and explored the pressure of the bar. In our second episode, we explored parenthood, from pregnancy through to managing family life in general. In this, our third and final episode, our theme is belonging. We'll start off by hearing from our guests about confidence and imposter syndrome, and then we'll turn to consider the importance of networks and community in fostering a sense of belonging.
A lot has happened in the last year since we posted our first episode. Most relevant to this episode, The Guardian published a list of notable members of the Garrick Club, which was, until recently, an exclusive all-male private members' club. On that list were a number of male members of the bar and judiciary, and unsurprisingly, this provoked strong feeling across the profession. An open letter was circulated calling on all judges to resign from the club, and equality specialist Karen Monaghan wrote an op-ed for The Times suggesting that Garrick Club members should not decide sex discrimination or sexual assault and rape cases.
Yeah, and of course we had the recent Charlotte Proudman BSB disciplinary proceedings, which we discussed in our 2024 roundup episode, which I would recommend everyone listens to. So, lots to reflect on as we discuss feelings of imposter syndrome and community in the context of gender equality at the bar. And I'm sure our listeners won't be surprised to hear that our overall impression on this topic is not that the days of the bar being an old boys club are far behind us.
Right, so let's jump straight into our conversation with Clodagh Bradley Casey on imposter syndrome.
I don't think that being a woman per se impedes your ability to progress your career, but your mindset can do. And I think I'm certainly guilty of certain ways of thinking that are perhaps more common as a woman. So, for example, imposter syndrome is not unique to women, but I think it's probably more common amongst us. And it's something that I've always suffered from the outset at university, thinking I'd got there through some administrative error until I eventually got my degree result and knew that perhaps I had got there on merit. And the same persists at the bar, but I think that that isn't always such a bad trait because it encourages you to always go to, you know, the nth degree to make sure that you're doing the very best for your client. But it can hold you back in terms of career progression if it acts as an impediment to you taking the next step along the career ladder. And there's plenty of research out there to show that women have a tendency not to apply for roles and lessened until they think that they fulfill 100% of the criteria. And there are statistics indicating that if men fulfill the majority of the criteria, that'll do, and they'll take the leap of faith and apply for that role. And there's some merit in that approach. And it may be that your strengths are so significant in the areas that you know you do tick the boxes that one can manage the fact that you haven't yet ticked the boxes in the other areas, but you can do that along the way. And I think that that may be part of the more male mindset typically. So it doesn't mean that there's a difference in ability between the men and the women, but again, it's how they approach the timing of their application.
We also heard similar from Isabel McArdle on this.
One of the most significant problems that women face at the bar is just that on average, girls and women I think, still tend to undervalue their skills and abilities compared to men. Of course, not all of us and not all the time, but as a general impression, I see women applying for things slightly later, pushing themselves forward for certain lines of work less or later. And to some extent, we just need to try to find that confidence and make ourselves do it, even if we think, oh, it's embarrassing, I don't think I'm good enough. Just have a go anyway. And I think that clerks can play a role, chambers directors can play a role, not just to let us be steering our own ships entirely alone, but to prompt us to think about, well, you know, you're at about the right level now where you could think about, I don't know, an assistant coroner position, or you could think about the Attorney General's A panel. Have you thought about that? Are you thinking about applying for Silk soon? And you know, I think in many chambers that is going on, but perhaps it can go on more. Perhaps we can try to encourage people to think more about where they want to be 5 years' time, 10 years' time earlier. And I think that would be pretty helpful, obviously, to people of all genders, but perhaps particularly to women who, in my experience, are just that little bit more reticent to push themselves forward for the very top positions, prizes, cases, posts, whatever it may be. I think there's good evidence, isn't there, outside the bar, I'm not sure what there is inside the bar, that promotions in employment situations, that women are slower to apply for promotions, less likely to ask for pay rises, etc. And it's not because we aren't good enough, but it's because we don't think we're as good.
I suspect that this is because, as a woman, you're underrepresented, particularly in the higher levels of the bar and the judiciary. And this can feed into this sense that you don't belong. Let's hear from some of our guests about their experiences of this. First up, Emma Louise Fenelon.
I recall one case in particular about 3 or 4 years ago at a court in Imperial Wharf, where there were 14 legal teams, all led by men. The only exception was me acting for my client. And you do stand out. And I think that can be a good and a bad thing, because you are very often all the more determined then to make sure that you have prepared your case to within an inch of its life, so that when you do stand out, it's for the right reasons and not for the wrong reasons. But it is unfortunately still the case that women are underrepresented in court, and particularly in superior courts. There's been plenty of research done about the ways in which women are not appearing, for example, in the Court of Appeal and in the Supreme Court at the same level as men. And I'm talking about silks now, I'm not talking about junior barristers. And it's excellent that there are now ideas about offering junior counsel more speaking opportunities. But one of the things that you can't avoid as a female barrister is very often being in court and being the only woman on your feet.
Yeah, and the example that you gave about 14 legal teams and being the only woman in them, it's still surprising in this day and age that that kind of thing happens. But you're absolutely right. I've similarly been in courtrooms where there's absolutely loads of barristers, but somehow you're the only woman there.
When I spoke to Sally Smith, Casey, she pointed out another difficulty with underrepresentation, in particular at more senior levels of the bar.
One thing I did feel pressure on, actually, it's just occurred to me talking to you, and that was when I applied for Silk. A number of people said to me, I was young when I got Silk, slightly younger than the average, and a number of people said to me, oh, you're not going to have any trouble because you're a woman and they are looking for women.
Right.
And that takes it away from you on both levels, because if you get it, you think everyone thinks I've got it young because I'm a woman. And if you don't get it, it makes you feel an even worse failure, because you think even though they're looking for women, they didn't want me.
Yeah, that's rubbish.
So that is rubbish. But I mean, I was fortunate because I got it.
And I hope your successes were appropriately celebrated, Sally.
Well, they were. Yes, they were. And there was some truth in it too, I think. I mean, I haven't got imposter syndrome. I think I would have got Silk, but I might well have got it a year or so later.
So there are two strands that have emerged here on imposter syndrome. The first is that it emerges from a basic lack of representation, especially, as I said earlier, at the more senior levels of the bar and judiciary, and in certain practice areas. and secondly, a culture which has meant that women feel tokenized, minimizing their achievements.
Yeah, I think these explanations are more obvious because they come from people's direct experiences, but I suspect there are more subtle factors which contribute to the feeling of other at the bar. And it's still an incredibly old-fashioned profession, and I think that although the rituals, dress, and language of the bar often don't feature in kind of day-to-day practice when you're working in your home office in your trackies, they're still there, and it's easy to forget that they're there when you're so used to something. And I think you feel that quite keenly when you speak to people who aren't familiar with the bar and they're sort of looking into the profession, and you often get comments about how archaic it is. Lady Justice Whipple made this point in her interview.
I think chambers tend to be quite idiomatic in the way that they work, and they tend to be built on a sort of quite a lot of unspoken rules about this is the way we do things, and cultures that are sometimes a bit fusty and a bit overly dependent on individuals, and sometimes just a few individuals who happen to be at the top. I don't mean to suggest for a moment, of course, that that's one Crown Office row, but as I have quite a lot of jobs that bring me into contact with the bar more generally, I think that remains a problem. I just think sometimes, you know, the culture, the fustiness, the old-fashionedness of the place can really hold back individual careers, and it's not a sort of personal thing, it's more to do with a lack of open-mindedness about who might be able to do a particular job in a particular way and do it well. And that's just a bit depressing actually when you see it and when you meet it and when you're part of it, but I think that remains an obstacle. I do think that chambers, good sets of chambers, are really onto this already, and I think that there has been an enormous amount of change. I've been out of the bar for about 8 years now, and I can see that the bar is really looking hard to try to stamp out these rather old-fashioned ways of working and to be much more open-minded and inclusive in the way that it recruits and that it opens doors for barristers once they're in.
And although this cultural point might seem abstract, as we've just heard, this does manifest itself in concrete ways. So to give some examples, it can be not putting your name forward for certain types of work, feeling like you have to prove yourself and working extra hard, not applying for Silk or the judiciary or other positions such as the Attorney General's panel, not recognising your own achievements, and perhaps not even considering the bar as a career choice in the first place.
Yeah, and also as we heard from Lady Justice Whipple in episode one, it's really difficult to measure this because we'll never really be able to capture how many times women didn't put themselves forward for certain things or weren't picked for certain roles.
As we've discussed in previous episodes in this series, the bar has changed, for the better, in many ways in the last few decades, and representation has improved. And one consequence is that with more women in the profession, a new generation of barristers like us have more role models to look up to. Here's Sally Smith KC on role models.
The whole sort of concept of role models is actually a very recent concept. I honestly don't remember thinking when I started the bar, I don't have any role models in those terms.
Yeah.
But I do remember thinking advocacy was different too. I mean, the styles of advocacy were different. And there were still a lot of these sort of Rumpole-like male barristers with this very sort of slightly histrionic way of presenting themselves, you know, sort of holding the lapels of their jackets, sort of slightly pompous oratorial way of doing it. And I do remember thinking to myself, I mustn't copy that, because although it sounds all right in them, it would sound asinine in me.
Yeah.
And now looking back, I can see that what I was really thinking was I don't have a role model. I don't have someone to copy. And I never did have anyone to copy. You know, I mean, I never heard a female advocate. I mean, I didn't try and adapt, not consciously anyway. I mean, I admired a lot of people. And so I may have subconsciously copied them, and I may have sounded more, I don't know whether I sounded more authoritarian than a woman barrister would today. I don't know. I can't.
It's an interesting thought experiment, isn't it? If you were training now, would your advocacy style be different? It's, you know, obviously impossible to know. And so many of these things, like you say, are just subconscious. You don't deliberately lower your voice or become more assertive. You often just do that in response to the room that you're in.
And I guess as more and more women take silk and are in the most senior legal roles in the country, whether that's in the Supreme Court or as Lord Chief Justice, there will be a greater range of role models as women forge their own and often quite different paths to success.
And I think it's not just being a woman in a senior position that makes for a good role model. When I think of good role models, I think of those people who encourage others, reach out to more junior women to suggest that they put themselves forward for things, support other women with applications, for example, or getting different types of work. So I guess it's more than just being there or existing. It's also about using your position to help others.
Yeah, I agree. So let's hear from Clodagh Bradley Casey, who I think is an excellent role model in Chambers, who makes the good point that support and allyship doesn't and shouldn't also just come from other women.
I think that women have a need to be positively nudged more so than men. And I certainly have needed that over the course of my career. I don't think I would have applied for Silk when I did if I hadn't been actively encouraged to do so by others. And I'm particularly grateful to one Silk who I was doing a very difficult inquest with. And he approached me after the inquest and asked, was I considering applying for Silk? And if not, that he thinks that I should. And I didn't know him at all. So it meant a lot that he'd taken the time out to say this. And he was really hugely supportive. And I've tried to repeat that. And I've tried to pass on the message that we need to pass that support on within the profession. And that applies to men just as much as women, because I think that we all need a bit of encouragement and support along the way so that we can do our best and be our best. And when I've had meetings, for example, about encouraging senior juniors within Chambers to apply for Silk, I've given them that anecdote and said that it's quite important that if you see someone who is excellent in court, that you let them know that, because we rarely get feedback of that nature from our clients. And it's also important where, for example, your opponent has lost and they might be afraid of asking you for a reference because they lost. But if you thought that technically they did a great job, then you should tell them that, and it helps the cream rise to the top.
And I think it does show the importance of representation, the need for encouragement within the profession, for people to take that next step. It's not a small thing to do to apply for Silk or to apply for senior roles within the profession. Having more women at the bar can only help that, because having more junior women see other women who've done that. And it doesn't have to come from women. I mean, your example is a male colleague who's done that for you. But I can't help but think being in a Chambers where there are lots of women supporting each other must help a great deal.
It's really important. And it's one of the reasons I came to this set of Chambers. There were so many remarkable women here who were real role models, who had achieved amazing things in their careers, and many of them, if not most of them, had children.
A new challenge to fostering a sense of community is new patterns of working. Although I say new, it's been about 5 years since the pandemic, so I suppose perhaps not so new anymore. But as more of us work remotely, footfall in Chambers decreases post-pandemic. And these informal opportunities to speak to your colleagues, to casually mention career opportunities, to check in with how each other is doing, they become more infrequent. And this obviously isn't unique to the bar, but I think the nature of barristers as predominantly self-employed professionals does to some degree heighten the amount that this affects us as compared to other professions. We heard from Isabel McArdle on this.
You know, we've come a long way, but I think that women can go further by believing in ourselves and supporting each other, passing on the knowledge and the tips when we have acquired them, when we've learned them, and just paving that way. And, you know, I look back and I feel incredibly privileged to be at the bar at the time when I am, compared to what it was like 30, 40, 50 years ago. But we've still got further to go, and I'm optimistic that things will improve even further still.
I agree. I think fostering a supportive, encouraging community at the bar is so important to sort of mitigate that imposter syndrome that I think women do experience more, as well as other people at the bar for other reasons. You know, people from, I don't really like the phrase, but non-traditional backgrounds, or people from minority ethnic communities. I think it's really important to encourage that. But I think one of the difficulties with this kind of new era of more remote, flexible working is that we're seeing fewer people come in physically to chambers. And so it is harder to just catch those informal opportunities to talk to people about how they are, how they're feeling, and encourage them.
Yeah, perhaps my enthusiasm for even more remote working is a reflection of the stage I'm at with three small children and being, you know, I suppose a senior junior. Whereas if I was in the first 5 years and childless, I probably would have quite a different view. Perhaps I'm being overly positive in my view about remote working and flexible working, because you're right that we have lost something post-pandemic in that chambers having fewer people there on a daily basis must mean, especially for those who are new to the bar, that you just don't have those water cooler type conversations where someone says, oh, I've got this really interesting problem, and you join in, or you raise your interesting problem and we all learn from each other. It's just that little bit harder to phone people up and say, I'm really worried about this point, or I don't know what to do about this head of loss, or something of that nature. So, yeah, I guess we've got to try to strike a balance, haven't we, between seeing each other and being able to be supportive and to pass on our knowledge. But on the other hand, keeping work flexible and keeping things like commuting minimized, because that enables us to retain people who have other things going on, caring responsibilities, childcare responsibilities that are potentially very disruptive to their professional lives. In my own family, the social mobility just a generation or two back has wildly improved. And who am I to not apply for things just because I feel underconfident about it? I should damn well push myself forward and get every feather in my cap that I can, because 200 years ago, brilliant people were down the mine, felling the trees, brewing the beer, never got the opportunity to be anything more than what they were born into. And now we have not a perfect system, but so much to be grateful for compared to how things were in the relatively recent past.
And here's Clodagh again, making a similar point to Isabel.
I think that they are all really important issues, and we need to continue supporting one another and keep a lookout for someone who maybe is having a more challenging time than you are at the moment. And that ties in with one thing that I think is important in this post-COVID era, where we're doing so much remote working, that I think we also need to make sure that we have in-person contact professionally as well as socially, because you don't get those unscheduled conversations that I think are pretty vital to the retention of talent at the bar, where if you are across a Zoom call and say, hi, how are you? The response will generally be fine. And you may not pick up on the body language that shows that, in fact, you're having a really tough time. And just a chat over a cup of tea can make all the difference. Or it may be that you want to talk through a particularly tricky case and you hesitate to do so over a Zoom call. And if you're there in chambers, then you can talk it through and you can see by poking your head round the corner of the door that the person isn't under the cosh at this particular moment. And it's all right to talk through the issue that you've got. And it leads to better decisions on your own part. And that's good for chambers and for the profession.
So whilst we're facing new challenges with new ways of working, it's easy to lose sight of how far the bar has come. So we thought we'd highlight this with a few anecdotes from Chloe Turville, a clerk at Wancor, Emma Louise Fenelon, and Judith Rogers. But just before we go to them, I thought I'd share a heartening anecdote from my day in court today, which is that there were four parties represented. And out of those four parties, I think three of them were represented by female barristers, and two were female barristers of colour as well. So it was, I think, a very, very diverse courtroom. And it was really brilliant to see a kind of range of lots of different people representing the parties. And I think it just goes to show how far the world has moved on.
It does make a difference, doesn't it? I've been in a situation where I've had an all-female opponent and a female judge as well. And so there was not a single male lawyer in the room. And it just, it didn't feel conspiratorial, but it did feel like a good thing. And I felt everyone had that. We didn't explicitly acknowledge it, but it did feel like everyone in the room was kind of like, yeah, this is really good. And even though I think we practice in areas where there tend to be more women, both solicitors and barristers, it still makes you feel nice after a long day in court.
Yeah, I think what was actually nice and interesting about this experience was that it actually didn't really occur to me for a while. And I think that's nice because it kind of shows that it isn't so exceptional. It shouldn't feel so exceptional. So I didn't walk in and think, well, you know, it's so cool to have so many women here. It actually was about probably halfway through the first day that I sort of realized how mixed the courtroom was.
Mm.
So the fact that it wasn't immediately striking, I think, was heartening in a way.
Yeah. Happy International Women's Day to you, Kieran.
I mean, without blowing my own trumpet, I'm obviously now in a much more senior position. So it must be quite comforting for people entering the job to know that, you know, you can progress if you're a woman. It's not just for the boys. I'm someone who started, like I said, at the bottom, pushing trolleys around and doing all manner of jobs to pave the way in my career. And I've sort of moved up various positions. And that must be, I hope, inspiring for newer generations to see and think, oh, I can do that too. And I think that's quite prominent in many sets of chambers. You know, you go on sort of websites of other chambers and you look at how the clerk's room is made up in terms of gender and different backgrounds and things. And you're definitely seeing more women now at the senior end, which I think must be very encouraging to younger generations, but also for barristers too. When I think about the sort of great clerking legends who are now retiring from other chambers, I can think of a few names. They are all men. And I think when I was sort of progressing in my career, I thought to myself, will that ever be me? Like, if I look around, the people that I aspire to be are all men. Am I just kind of wasting my time? Will that ever be me? I don't know. So perhaps now that there are more women, younger girls are thinking, well, look, she's done it. That could be me. So yeah, I would hope that that's it. But I know the Institute of Barristers Clerks too have really made an effort to make sure that gender is considered in terms of recruiting, clerking recruitment agencies too. But as I said, entry into the job, for me, even 15 years ago, I never ever was kind of put off by anyone to think that it wasn't something that was achievable for me as a girl.
That's really nice to hear. And I think you're right, though. Clerking is an odd career, and it's not something that actually many, but people don't really know about it. And actually, there's a kind of the same with barristering. People don't really know what it is. And so I think having just more women in the profession must help, because I hear stories about, well, our head clerk's dad was a clerk, wasn't he? So lots of people get into the profession just through knowing somebody else who does it, because it's just not something that you're told by schools, careers advisors to do.
No.
Because not many people do it. It's a very small world. So I think you're right, having more women doing it. And so having women see that women can do it and can also achieve within the profession is probably just the most important thing for clerking, knowing that it's something that you can do as a woman and that you can progress in and do really well in.
Yeah, definitely.
I think one of the things that I don't think it's exclusive to the bar, I think this is a feature of any industry in which women are underrepresented, but it does mean that there can be really wonderful camaraderie between the women who are there, and the support structure that you then build around yourself very often involves lots of people who have been in similar situations, and it's being able to share those occasional horror stories, I think, that makes the job all the more bearable, and particularly the gendered aspect of the job all the more bearable.
The other thing that I found in chambers is that chambers as a whole is a supportive place. And when I was ill, when I was pregnant, when I came back, colleagues were all very supportive. But in particular, there's a group of women in chambers who look out for each other. And I think that's a really lovely thing. And, you know, some of my best friends are people in Chambers that I've known in the time that I was there, and we genuinely like being with each other, you know, to the point that we've been on holiday together and we hang around with each other outside work as well. But people look out for each other, you know, ask questions, are you okay, do you need help? Always there to give advice and tips on things. And I think that's one of the really lovely things about certainly being in our Chambers. I don't know any different. I don't know if it's the same everywhere else, but there is a nice supportive atmosphere.
Absolutely. And I think being self-employed and the way that we work, one of the dangers, I think, is that it can be quite easy to become quite isolated. It's not as if you have a boss who's kind of looking out for you, or necessarily you work in an office where you have to be there every day or anything along those lines. So I think being able to maintain those communities and connections with other barristers is really important. And certainly to me, is one of the main ways in which I feel like I survive doing this job.
Exactly. I think that's absolutely right. And things are different now post-COVID. We work from home a lot more, but I'm still in touch with colleagues and friends every day. And to be honest, I think if we didn't have that more flexible option now, I would have really struggled. But having been seriously ill, you know, I had an uncomplicated pregnancy, but you feel tired and you feel under weather at times. And then coming back to work when you've got a small child at home, the ability to work from home, I think, has made a big difference. Certainly, I wouldn't have been able to carry on to the same level if I hadn't had the option of not having to go into Chambers every single day.
You've talked very candidly, Judith, about your illness. And I wondered whether you felt from your experience that there was anything specific about being a woman that was unwell, and, you know, whether you experienced that differently because of being a woman.
I'm not sure that that's right. I mean, obviously, the nature of the illness I had could only happen to a woman. But the one thing that was really important to me was just how kind everyone in Chambers who knew. As I said before, I found it difficult telling people, but the people that I told, particularly the senior people, were unfailingly supportive. And that really struck me. And I'm sure in our Chambers, if it was a male member of Chambers who'd been unwell with a similar illness, that people would have been equally as kind. I think it certainly changed my perspective on life. I think it's one of those things that I said earlier, you don't expect it to happen to you. And I never thought at that age that I would be that unwell, that my husband would be having to help me sit up in bed to the point that I was that unwell. But yeah, I think it struck me that we're very lucky at One Current Office Road to have the people around us that we do. And I would like to think it didn't make a difference that I'm a woman. I'm sure it didn't. But the one thing was that people were lovely. And, you know, I'm fine now. I'm better. And we had a happy ending to the story because I ended up with a lovely baby. And again, everyone's been extremely kind and helpful in helping me get back to work after 3 very turbulent years.
To continue in this positive vein, here's Emma Louise Fenlon in response to a question of how, if at all, being a woman has impacted her career or ability to do her job as a barrister.
I think it has been overwhelmingly positive for a couple of reasons. The first is that our work in clinical negligence and personal injury, and in particular child abuse, is the kind of work that involves meeting clients who are sometimes much more comfortable speaking to a woman about their experience. And so I know that in lots of the cases I do, I am being asked to look at a very intimate area of someone's life, and they are comfortable speaking to me because I happen to be a woman. And so in, for example, anything to do with gynecology and anything to do with, in particular, sexual assault and historical child abuse cases, my experience is that because I'm a woman, that has meant that people are more comfortable speaking to me about their experiences. Not everyone, but some clients, I think, appreciate speaking to someone who is sometimes the same gender as them, but I've also come across male clients who are more comfortable speaking to a woman about their experience. So I think that's one way in which it has positively impacted my ability to do my job. And the second way I think being a woman has impacted my ability to be a barrister is the lived experience that women have about what it's like to be a woman. And I think in particular, what that helps you understand is the subtle ways in which there are very often power dynamics in interactions between people in hospitals, or as between victims of crime and the police, or as between employers and employees. And I think understanding the kinds of questions that you might want to ask, or ways in which you probe things, can often be born of your own experience in life because you have faced similar sexism or similar discrimination. And I think often people are more willing to open up and be candid in situations like that because you have that lived experience. For example, lots of our cases, Kim, you'll know, deal with what happens when things go badly wrong during pregnancy or during labour or after labour. And I think having a lived experience of that is something that is very reassuring to clients when they come to you and they have specific questions about their treatment, where they themselves might not necessarily even understand the ways in which they have been let down. And so again, I think that's a way in which being a woman has positively impacted on my ability to do my job.
And similar to Emma, here are Cara Guthrie's concluding thoughts on her interview.
Kieran, could I add one more thing though, which is I do think that the bar is a fantastic career for women. And I do feel very fortunate to work with colleagues and other professionals where I can honestly say I don't feel that I have ever been subject to any form of discrimination because I'm a woman. And, you know, the skill set that is required of us, I think, is one that women have as much as men. And I do feel very fortunate to do the job that I do.
I'm glad we ended our interviews on a positive note. And although it's been really important in this series to acknowledge how much we owe to so many incredible women that came before us, I don't think we should be complacent about what challenges lie ahead. One story that I think is important not to let fade from people's memories is the resignation of Master McLeod this time last year. Master McLeod commented at the time, "I have reached the conclusion that in 2024, the national situation and present judicial framework is no longer such that it is possible in a dignified way to be both trans and a salaried, fairly prominent judge in the UK."
Yeah, I agree. I think her resignation is a great loss to the judiciary, but also a story that serves as a sober warning against assuming that culture moves in one way towards a more enlightened, tolerant and progressive future. And I don't think this is just an issue in the context of LGBTQ rights. I think we should be concerned about this for all women. We've seen the rise of anti-feminist movements, especially actually among young women, from the popularity of tradwife content online and the rise of populist ideas of conventional gender roles. So I don't think we can assume that everything is just going to keep getting better in terms of our cultural attitudes towards women and work.
Absolutely. And I think other challenges include, for example, childcare costs, which can make continuing any sort of career, but particularly career at the bar, it can mean that you end up, for example, paying more in childcare than you're actually earning. And so people can start to wonder, well, you know, it's not really economically viable for me to work because actually I'm making a loss. And particularly in areas of the bar that are less well paid. So for example, areas where you're more reliant on legal aid, and coincidentally, they tend to be the areas where there are more women practicing. I think that's a real challenge. As you said, Lucy, it's not something that we can assume is going to get better. I think it's getting worse, if anything, with the rising cost of everything for everyone. So, you know, that's a huge challenge. I think also there has been recent reporting around the extent of sexual harassment at the bar still. And you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Lucy, but I think Harriet Harman's conducting an investigation into that as we speak. So, you know, there still are real challenges to women practicing at the bar. And many of those are either the same or very similar to challenges that existed, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence as well that we're seeing the rise of these populist anti-feminist movements at a time when inequality is increasing and work is more precarious and the cost of living basic dignified lives is a lot higher.
Yeah.
So I think those two things just go hand in hand. Going back to the bar, I think, you know, lots of the issues that we have looked at in this series about equal pay and the kind of dual burdens on work and parenthood are things that are in large part due to the kind of self-employed nature of the bar. So as much as we can change culture in chambers and help foster a better sense of community or improve policies for maternity leave, for example, ultimately we're working for ourselves and we are exposed because of that, and to some extent possibly more vulnerable to kind of social and economic pressures that affect working women across society than if we were working in larger corporate structures that have lots of in-work benefits. So I think because of that, the solutions to those enormous pressures are going to lie beyond just the reach of our relatively small profession and should encourage us to think much more widely and more structurally about how we can go about changing things for working women across society for the better.
Absolutely.
So thank you everyone so much for joining us on this International Women's Day series. Through all of our three episodes, we've had some really fascinating and interesting feedback from people. It's been really nice to have reflections from women at all levels of seniority at the bar speaking to me, and I'm sure you as well, Kieran, about their experiences, but also not just at the bar, speaking to solicitors and others who have important stories. And I think it's nice to have opportunities like this to capture those stories and have a small oral history of women in work at the bar.
Finally, huge thanks to all of the contributors to this series and to all of you for listening.
Thank you so much for joining us.
This episode of LawPod UK was presented by Lucy McCann. The series is produced by One Crown Office Row.